Hello and welcome to this, episode 2 of season 13 of the Ubuntu podcast. In today's show, we're going to be talking to Mark about his new Steam Box. We have some command line love and, of course, some of your wonderful feedback. This week, I am joined by Mark.
Hello. Me
Hello
again.
There. How are you?
I'm very good.
Yeah. Have you been staying at home?
I have been remaining indoors.
And Alan, hello there.
Hello. How you doing?
I'm very well. How's things?
Indoors.
Yeah. All the things are indoors.
All the things are indoors.
So, what have you been up to since we last spoke?
I have been using a thing called Mattermost to connect two chat systems together. Mattermost is a chat system in itself, but it's got this kind of gateway thing that lets you connect anything to anything, pretty much. And it's because the Ubuntu QA guys wanted to have a gateway between Telegram and IRC.
Mm-hmm.
And so, they wanted to like gate messages between the two. So I used this Mattermost thing, to do that. And it was surprisingly easy. It's quite comprehensive. So the config allows you to configure like anything to anything. But I just used IRC to Telegram and vice versa, both directions. Mm-hmm. The IRC was straightforward enough. You know, you give it a channel name, give it the name of a nickname of a bot, whatever you want to call it. And registered that name in IRC, and then you register the bot on Telegram, and there's this Telegram thing called the bot father that you talk
yes.
to.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah, yeah.
The bot father lets you create bots. And once you've done all that, you plug it all into this config file, and it's just running on a server I run. And every time someone says something on IRC, it appears in Telegram. And every time someone says something on Telegram, it appears in IRC.
Nifty.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
This is Matterbridge, is that
Matterbridge, that's it. It's from the same people who make Mattermost, I think. But it's just called right. Matterbridge. Yeah, it seems easy enough. Yeah, I could probably run it on a Raspberry Pi. It's running on a Bitfolk VPS, but it probably could run just about anywhere.
On a cluster of Raspberry Pis, maybe.
Yes, you probably could. What about you? What have you been up to?
I've been dabbling in a bit of live streaming. I've been live streaming some Ubuntu development. And as a result of that, I've created a new bit of software. I've re-implemented, I've created an equivalent to VirtualBox in Bash.
Of course you have.
You were so inspired by your Bash gaming adventures, you thought you'd level up.
He's going to rewrite the world in Bash.
I'm going to create a desktop environment in Bash. I think that's the next project.
Yeah.
So I have played with this thing. It's called QuickEMU, isn't it?
QuickEMU, yeah.
Yeah. I was surprised how fast this is. I always thought VirtualBox was pretty quick, and I've used VirtualBox for years and years and years. And I have everyone who keeps telling me, don't use VirtualBox. You should use KVM and you should use QEMU. It's much faster. I've been using these things for years and years and years. And for the past few years, I found VirtualBox easier to use and faster than the alternatives. But now I'm changing my mind. Now that I've played with your awesome Bash script, because it really,
yeah,
it made throwing a VM together and launching it was just stupidly fast.
Yeah, it's really designed to make ISO testing of Linux distributions really quick and simple. Mm-hmm. So for a Linux distro, you only need two configuration options. Where is the ISO image? Where do you want the disk image to be created? It figures everything out for you. So it's not comprehensively configurable. It figures it all out. It figures out the resolution of the screens, the number of CPUs, the amount of RAM, the disk size. It figures all of that out for itself. And it automatically passes through your home folder into the guest, hooks up SSH access automatically. It can do USB pass through really easily. And it does OpenGL acceleration pass through to the host. And
crazy.
The script orchestrates that setup, but underneath is a snap called QEMU Virgil made by one of our colleagues at Canonical, Ogra. And this is a version of QEMU that's being compiled with every sort of hardware acceleration option enabled. So this is where we get the 3D acceleration and the memory allocation acceleration and all of the other stuff. So it sits on top of that and hands that off. So you get a really fast experience. So it's great for just, here's an ISO, I want to run it now, and you can just fire it at the ISO and be up and running in seconds.
Yeah, I was quite impressed. Well done.
Thank you. Right, with that, let's get on with the rest of the show. Okay, it is time to talk Linux, hardware, PCs, and gaming. Apparently, Mark, you have built yourself a new Steam box.
I have. So when we met up for a curry, about when you arrived, I got an Amazon parcel with lots That's of right. computery bits in, which we all got very excited over. There well, were. Since then,
yes.
Since then, I've actually put all this together and am now using it. As my new gaming PC, but it's a bit different to my old one for various reasons.
Your old one had like slimline, thin video cards, low power, low noise video cards, didn't it?
Yeah. So my old Steam box sat in my living room under my TV, which meant it had to look reasonable and be quiet. So with that in mind, I had like a low profile. Like home theater PC case under my TV with this in.
You've had that for a while, haven't you?
I have had it since 2014. I built it, so yeah, it's been going a good while. Done me a good service. But yeah, the one of the big problems with that is that I could only get a low profile video card, which meant that I did upgrade it once while I had it, but it very rarely came along that there was one that was worth buying. And yeah, just generally I was quite limited at what I could do. And also it served as a Kodi box. So I was doing streaming of Netflix and iPlayer and things like that through that box, which meant if one of us was doing that, I couldn't also play games. And the straw that broke the camel's back was that Shadow of the Tomb Raider came out for Linux, and, the CPU I had, wasn't good enough and I needed to upgrade my RAM. And at that point it was basically a whole rebuild.
Okay, so you've been running the Linux home entertainment dream for some years. So when you decided to upgrade, what parts did you pick and why did you choose them?
So I went all AMD for this build.
That's very of the now, that decision.
Is that Team Red? I get confused with the colours. That's Team Red, isn't it?
So what I was running before, originally it had an AMD APU in, which is where it has the accelerated graphics built in to the same chip as the CPU. Then I upgraded that with a discrete NVIDIA graphics card, which I mainly did because managing AMD drivers used to be an absolute nightmare, and I completely broke my system several times, and NVIDIA drivers were just easier to install. Now, you don't need to worry about that because the AMD drivers are in the kernel. So I thought, again, I'll make my life easier. I've always pretty much bought AMD CPUs anyway, and I've generally found you get a bit more bang for your buck with them. So that's why I've got an AMD Ryzen 5 2600X, which is a 6-core CPU.
What's that kind of equivalent in the Intel world? Because I don't know one AMD CPU from another.
I couldn't tell you exactly.
I think it's fair to say nothing, because it outperforms everything that Intel would have at that price point.
Yeah.
And it's cheaper. So AMD are kind of in a class of their own at the moment. And that particular CPU is the hot property. This is like the sweet spot for price performance, particularly for gaming.
That was basically, in choosing these parts, what I was looking at was, yeah, at what point do you get diminishing returns with more money spent? So that's why I went with that one. And I've got 16 gig of RAM, which I can't remember the manufacturer of the RAM, but it's fast RAM, basically.
Does it have LEDs on it? Does it flash?
It doesn't. Right. So for a reason I'll come to in a minute, there is nothing fancy looking about this at all. But yeah, it's clocks at something like 3,200 megahertz, which is a lot faster than any RAM I've bought in the past. The interesting thing about that is, so that's a sort of overclocking option, but last time I built a PC, overclocking, when the first few times I built a PC, overclocking meant you had to have some sort of special voltage adjusting things and lots of extra cooling. Now you go into the sort of BIOS UEFI setup screen and it says, oh, your RAM has this overclocking profile, do you want it? And you say yes please, which I thought was quite cool.
Nice.
The speed of the RAM is particularly beneficial to AMD CPUs. The faster the clock speed on the RAM, the AMD CPUs love that. So fast RAM AMD CPUs is a match made in heaven.
So you said it's all AMD. You also got an AMD GPU as well?
Yes. So I went for an AMD Radeon RX 590, which is a normal, like, big couple of fans, two PCI slot GPUs, the kind that I could never actually fit in the case before. So yes, it's pretty nice. Again, I sort of looked at, there's much more performant and much more expensive AMD GPUs available, but you're talking like 400 quid plus for those, and I wasn't willing to spend anything near that much.
So if this is a full size card, you can't be putting it under the TV, can you? Or
no.
Have you got a bigger box?
So yeah, I've actually got an old, just bog standard tower case, which I had when I built a computer at uni, just as my general workstation, which has been sitting in the loft unused for a while, but I've now recommissioned it. So it's, not a pretty looking thing. As I said, none of this is pretty looking, but the difference is that this isn't in my living room anymore.
Right.
This is actually sitting in my spare bedroom and it's completely headless.
Ooh.
Huh.
There are so many questions.
I know.
My mind is a torrent of really lots of questions.
Well, start with the obvious one about why it's in the spare bedroom then, shall we?
Well, it's in the spare bedroom because, it's ugly, so I don't want to have to look at it. And it's big and it's noisy, so I don't want to have to hear it. And there's network connectivity in the spare room.
Have you got a very long HDMI cable running from your lounge to your spare bedroom and a very long USB lead or something? How does that work?
No. So plugged into the HDMI port on my graphics card is a little dongle which pretends to be a monitor but isn't.
Hmm.
And then I have a Steam Link plugged into my TV, and I also have Steam running on my laptop, and I have Steam Link on my phone, which means that I can turn my PC on in the spare room, and then I can stream it to wherever I happen to want to play games at that particular point.
When you say you turn it on, do you have a very long stick that reaches around corners that you can poke the power button to turn it on?
That's exactly what I've done, Alan. Well done. Yeah. No, so Steam Link itself actually supports, if it already knows that, if it's already seen a computer on your network before, it can send wake on LAN.
Oh, nice.
Signals to it. You just select it and it'll try. So there was a bit of fiddling around to set that up. I found that I had to install a different Ethernet driver. There was like a DKMS Ethernet driver for my...
What, that can put the computer to sleep in the right mode so the LAN adapter is waiting?
It could do it before, but you had to do it... You had to set a flag each time you shut it down, whereas...
Right.
Yeah, then I found that there was this other driver when you install that and it just works as long as you've got it set up in the BIOS.
So you also mentioned this HDMI dongle thing.
Yes.
What's going on there?
So the reason for that is I'd experimented a bit with streaming Steam from my old Steam box, but the thing with Steam streaming is it only wants to stream what it's actually outputting. So I'd thought in the past, what I might be able to do is set up some sort of virtual display or something, and then it doesn't have to be outputting that to the TV. It can just stream the virtual display over the network, but it doesn't like doing that at all. So I found that the easiest thing here is to just make it think it's outputting to a screen, and then it'll stream what it's outputting there over the network as well. And that lets you do things like, setting the resolution of what you're expecting it to go to as well.
So it's an HDMI cable, just
pretty much
a stub of a cable that makes the output
yes.
think there's yes. a monitor
so if
attached.
You go in via, say, X2Go, so I use that for doing sort of remote administration, and you like log into a desktop and you open up the display utility, it says, oh, there's a full HD display connected here.
Cunning.
Okay. This is all very interesting. Now, I'd just like to wind back a little bit. You were saying about how in the past you'd struggled configuring AMD drivers. How is that experience today?
Well, I installed Ubuntu 18.04 and then I ran Shadow of the Tomb Raider, which was the game I wanted to play first. Well, in fact, no, I didn't. I ran GLX Gears to see if it was giving me an insanely high frame rate, which is the yes, you have hardware acceleration working test that I do. And on a fresh install, it was all working, and that was great. Then I ran Shadow of the Tomb Raider, and it said, ah, you're running the AMD GPU driver, but you don't have the Vulkan drivers installed or the Vulkan API installed for Mesa.
Right.
So I did actually have to go and install some extra Xorg Mesa packages so that I had the Vulkan APIs there, because Shadow of the Tomb Raider is entirely Vulkan. There's no OpenGL there. So that did make me think it would be nice in the future if Ubuntu had all of this installed by default.
I think we're doing that.
Good.
I think we're doing that now.
What was the experience, though? Did you went to run the game and it told you you didn't have support for this thing, read this page, and the page tells you what to apt install, or was it you had to go and figure it out yourself?
No, they had a Feral, who do the port of Shadow of the Tomb Raider, had support pages for the various things right. that might be not as they would expect. Like the
right.
they have this thing about their the CPU governor, they want to have that set to performance mode. And they have a go to this web page and it will tell you how to configure it.
Okay. So do you do anything when you exit? I imagine you've now got it streaming to the Steam Link that's under the telly, and the Steam Link is just going to work with Steam. What do you do? Do you just tell it to make the computer go to sleep? And then the next time you come along, you press the button on the Steam controller and it wakes the thing up using Steam Link that's under your TV?
So there's a couple of ways I do it depending on how I'm playing. So if I'm playing via the Steam Link, when you're remoted into the Steam Big Picture mode on your Steam box, you then get an option in the power menu to shut down this remote device. So you do that and the whole thing shuts down, and then you'll be dropped to the Steam box, the Steam Link screen. Again, so you could either then start it up, or you could put the Steam Link to sleep then and then turn it back on with the controller and send another wake on LAN packet and you're up and running again.
So if you're just using the Steam Link, not using the phone or anything, just sat in front of the TV like a normal human game playing person, you can just press the button on the Steam controller. It wakes up the Steam Link. Steam Link wakes up. You choose the machine that you want to wake up. You click on that. That wakes up your desktop PC. You wait for that to boot. When it says it's ready, then you get the Steam big picture mode. And that's it.
And in fact, the same thing happens with the Steam Link app on the phone. That does wake on LAN and it does the shutdown thing. What's different is if you're using the Steam desktop client to do in-home streaming, that doesn't work in quite the same way. So what I've done there is I've installed the wake on LAN utility and set up a little .desktop file, which just runs wake on LAN to that computer, and then on the Steam box itself I've got another one, so you add that to the Steam interface as a non-Steam game, which just means run this launcher. Then I've got one on the Steam box itself which is shut down, so I open Steam on my laptop and I've got one option which is launch remote Steam. I click that, wait about 15 seconds, then I get all of my games appear and I get another option with all the games, which is shut down remote Steam. I run that and it comes up trying to stream a game and then it says, oh, wait a minute, there's nothing here, and then goes away and then it's all shut down.
That's rather smooth. Yeah. I like that.
Nice.
Are there any negatives to this new setup? Anything you're not happy about?
Not really. I mean, as long as everything's working, it all works really well. Like, Shadow of the Tomb Raider is a very nice looking game. And if the streaming wasn't working well, you could tell because it wouldn't look as good as it's meant to look. And I've had some issues where I've, if I've been playing on my phone and I've disconnected from my phone and then connected through my Steam Link box on the TV. One or two times I've noticed that the stream quality has been terrible. And what's actually happened there is it's still trying to stream to my phone and to the Steam Link at the same time. And then I have to faff around and manually disconnect one of them.
Right.
And also I found if you're connected through the Steam Link and something goes wrong and crashes, fixing it just from the Steam Link is in some cases impossible. And at that point, that's why I've got X2Go handy, because then I can log into the remote session via yes. X2Go or something like that.
Yeah, we've had a similar problem with streaming, admittedly, games from Sam's Windows PC to the Steam Link. Yeah. If something goes awry, you have to send a child. You'll have this in a few years. You have to send a child up the stairs to press buttons and type codes in and then come back downstairs and shout up the stairs. Have you done it yet? Yes, now press this button and type this code in. And then, it's the only reason for having children. But yes, it's very useful.
There's a lot whilst we've been off the air, Google Stadia has sort of been surpassed by GeForce Now. And one of the key discussion points is around, what's the latency of these cloud streaming platforms? Have you any idea what the latency is when you're streaming from your spare room down to the front room?
I haven't tested it, but honestly, I was trying really hard to notice. And I absolutely couldn't.
Right.
The only latency I have actually noticed is if I'm using my Logitech wireless headset, if I plug that in, you have a little USB receiver dongle, I plug that into the Steam Link. I have found that if I'm doing that and I'm watching someone talking in the game, it seems out of sync. But anything that I do, and bearing in mind that Tomb Raider has quite a lot of things where you have to be right on the money with timing of pressing mm-hmm. buttons, otherwise you die horribly. I've tried really hard to notice the lag and it's not there.
In another show, I can talk to you about a low latency audio solution that I've come up with that will solve that problem with your headset.
Interesting.
Right. Well, that is fascinating. I would be interested to know if anyone of our listeners has a similar home Steam box setup. Are they using Steam Links and Android clients? Have you got thin fat client configurations? Have you compared it to the big streaming services that are emerging for games now? So do let us know. But with that, I think it's time to move on. And now it's time for everyone's favourite segment of the Ubuntu podcast, Command Line Love.
Your throat's still bad then.
Yeah. Hang on, I'll have another sip of beer. Right, so this week we have a utility called NCSpot. Now, there's a couple of interesting things about NCSpot. It has three of my favourite things in it. First of all, it's an ncurses-based terminal application. It's for Spotify, and it's published as a snap by my good friend, Mr. Alan Pope.
Hello,
so
that's me.
So what is all this about?
So I heard of NCSpot over a year ago, and I was trying to snap it, and there were some challenges with snapping it because of the strict confinement of snaps. And myself and Dustin Kryzak was also looking at snapping it separately. We both looked at snapping it, and then we happened to both mention it to each other, and we both came across the same problem. I think he filed an issue against the upstream project, and they said, yeah, we'll fix it, and they fixed the problem. I think it was something to do with where the configuration files are loaded from or something, and it had hardwired paths or something like that. And that was fixed, and we both forgot all about it for about a year. And then a month or so ago, one of us mentioned NCSpot, and we dug it back out and rebuilt it, and now it works. And so I submitted it to the store, the Snap store, and it works. And so basically you just launch NCSpot, you log in with your Spotify account, and then you see all of your music that you have added to playlists, and you can search for music and find artists, and it's super fast, and it's in a terminal, and it works brilliantly, and I love it, absolutely love it.
Yeah, you're really embracing the terminal these days.
Mm.
Yes.
It's a much smaller memory footprint than the big fat Chromium embedded framework that you're loading with, the full size Spotify mm-hmm. client. Now, obviously, it's not as pretty as a graphical client. If you're the kind of person who just wants to launch a music player, mm-hmm. choose a playlist or choose an album and then just hit play and then just leave it playing in the background, and then skip the odd track that you don't like with the media keys or with the...
Does it fully integrate with all of that stuff?
Yeah, it does the desktop media controls. So when you're playing in the terminal with NC Spot, in the notification thing at the top of the screen, you see the track and the album art, and you could just press next and previous and pause if you get a phone call or whatever. And it, somewhere in a terminal, the NC Spot is paused and moves on to the next track and stuff. It's just lovely. It's really, really nice if you've got a paid Spotify account.
I'm not sure how I feel about a terminal application doing desktop integration.
No, it's weird. Weird and freaky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there we go.
Yeah, it'd be like if you had a Bash game where you could use the controller.
No, that's perfectly reasonable. What are you talking about? So with that, you can all go off and snap install NC Spot, and we will move on to your feedback now.
We love getting your feedback. If you've got a comment about something you hear on the show, why don't you drop us an email on show@ubuntupodcast.org.
And here we are. It is now time for your feedback. And we did get some feedback whilst we were off the air. So Sean Smith, Jobby Harding and Tim Kiernan emailed us at show@ubuntupodcast.org requesting that we come back. Your wish is our command.
Sean has been listening for over a year and enjoys tinkering with Linux distros. He's now running Ubuntu Mate on a ThinkPad X250, whatever that is. Both facts, which guaranteed we'd mention it. Sean asked if we could have a quick discussion about SE Linux and why Ubuntu offers it as a package install rather than pre-installed, like, for example, on CentOS.
I think we need someone from security to talk about those kind of things.
Yeah, maybe we'll get our good friend Joe on to explain that in detail. But as I understand it, SE Linux is one of the LSMs. AppArmor is another. Ubuntu uses AppArmor, as does OpenSUSE, Debian, Solus, Manjaro. The Red Hat family of distros use SE Linux. They kind of do the same thing to do with, confinement and keeping things isolated. And they're different semantics for achieving that. And it's really... a distribution's choice as to which they prefer and which they want to go with. But there's LSM stacking coming now, so you can actually have both running at the same time.
Right, so we don't need to get Joe on.
Well, we do, because that's like the super simplified version. Joe would do a much better job.
Yes, he would. Also, Joby sent a lovely email outlining his Saturday breakfast schedule, which includes listening to us. Don't burn the toast, Joby. They've used Ubuntu for over 10 years on their main development workhorse and uses the show to keep up with the latest news from Canonical, as well as finding out about interesting projects.
Excellent.
I also listen to podcasts while making food. I have one of those, the hood that goes over your hob that extracts all the stuff out. There's a glass platform around the hob, and I place my phone on that and have it firing towards me playing podcasts, because then it's a eye and ear level, so it's perfect for audio, and it means I don't have headphones on, so I'm not gonna miss being called by other family members for their bacon sandwiches. Yeah.
That's next level podcast listening in the kitchen advice there, listeners.
Oh, yeah.
And Tim from America has been listening for a long time, and he is on the brink of replacing his MacBook Pro with a Linux machine in 2020. He particularly enjoys our accents, especially Laura's. Conversely, Bill Smith emailed in with this question. I would like to know what theme music you use for your podcasts. I used to listen, but have since left off the use of Ubuntu in favour of MX Linux. I miss your banter, but more than that, I miss hearing the music before and after the podcast.
Now, I put this in there because I thought, how on earth is he going to find out the answer if he doesn't listen to the show anymore? And so partly I think we shouldn't tell him, because I think, isn't it on the website somewhere? Doesn't it list what the music is?
No, it's not actually mentioned on the website. No.
Oh.
We've said it many times.
We have.
But not today.
We're terrible.
Yeah.
Albert Anderson from Fargo ND emails to ask a question. He writes, I've been listening since last July. I have a quick question. Do you have any information regarding Ubuntu Cinnamon? I have it installed on an old ThinkPad X200 with 8 GB of DDR3 RAM and a 240 GB SSD. I love this distro. Do you have any idea if it's going to be an official Ubuntu flavor? I sure hope it does. One other question. I have another ThinkPad, fan of yours, Alan, X220 running Zorin OS, but ThinkPad runs hot. Is there any software I can use to control the heat or the fans that is Linux-based? Writing this email, I have a CPU temperature sensor, and it shows 52 Fahrenheit watching YouTube and gets to about 88 Fahrenheit. It seems to be very warm.
Okay. I'll take the Cinnamon question, because we'll let the resident ThinkPad expert deal with the secondary question. So Joshua, who is leading the Ubuntu Cinnamon Remix project, is making excellent progress, and also being assisted by David from the Ubuntu Budgie project. And I know that they've been following the 2004 development cycle and trying to hit the same milestones in line with the official flavors, even though they're not an official flavor yet. You know, he's getting in the groove of working to that cadence. So it won't be an official flavor yet, but I see great progress there, and I'm sure that we will be extending our support to help them cross that, you know, milestone in the future. I'd love to see that.
And I think that's one of the things people don't appreciate, that there is a set of guidelines and rules before you can become an Ubuntu flavor. And what it's really protection for users. What they don't want is a flavor to just arrive and say, hey, we want to be a flavor with desktop XYZ. And everyone says, yep, that's great. And then if they walk away, or turns out they're not actually committed to doing the work, then that leaves someone else in the Ubuntu community having to pick up the can to look after those packages. So I think it's worth noting that there's a good reason why the technical board want people to show a series of releases that show that they are committed to doing this, and that suggests probable forward commitment mm-hmm. to future releases, so we don't leave users in the lurch. You know, we've heard over the years, you know, distros that just stop producing ISOs or stop producing updates, and it leaves users in the lurch. We don't want that to happen.
While we're talking about, you know, remixes, I also see that Ubuntu Lumina Remix is in the works as well. Lumina being the Qt-based desktop environment born out of from the BSD community. So
ooh.
Watch this space.
Mm. On the ThinkPad question, it's a tricky one. It depends which X220 you've got.
Here we go.
All right. So the short answer is, I'm not sure you can do a lot if it's an i7 X220, because the i7s are not really brilliantly thermally designed, the i7 X220 specifically. They generate a lot of heat. They're quite compact machines, and they just can't vent that heat out. One thing you might want to look at doing is replacing the thermal paste, maybe replacing the fan, and giving all of the fins on the heatsink a good clean. That might be something worth doing, because that paste, if you haven't replaced it, that paste has probably been in there for knocking on 7 years or more. So probably could do with being replaced, and that might help the thermal issues. There may be software like TLP or ways in which you can scale down the CPU to a lower frequency to extend your battery life and reduce the thermals. But I haven't found an ideal solution for that particular laptop. For the i7, especially, it does run hot. I have friends who have the i5 who say it doesn't run as hot. And if you have an i5 that's running hot, then I would still go down the route of replacing the thermal paste. Next up in ThinkPad Help Desk, Peter emailed about ThinkPads. He wrote in, "I think Alan likes old ThinkPads. Lucky for me, the company I work for has been using them for the last 20 years. In my role, I get to manage the fleet and cherry pick a few before they went to e-waste. Sadly, I got rid of the IBM series, as they do get used around the home in various projects, but they die eventually." And Peter included a photo collection, photo of his collection, rather, of his T61, T400, T430, X300, X301, X220, and a cheeky little Palm Pilot that snuck in there. It's quite a collection he has there. Very pretty, very well looked after, it seems. Thank you for sharing that with us, Peter.
I feel that ThinkPad Corner could be a new segment. But with that, that is the end of all of your wonderful feedback. Please do send it in. We love receiving it. We do read it all, but we can't read it all out. But let's move on. And that's all for episode 2 of season 13 of the Ubuntu podcast. It almost feels like we know what we're doing. Almost, but not quite. It's a bit rough around the edges.
After 12 years, you'd think we'd figure this out.
But yeah, it's doing it week in, week out that you get that fluency from. It feels a bit stilted, a bit tricky.
Yeah. It'll be fine later in the year. Yeah. Everyone stop listening now. Tune back in like September, October. We'll have it nailed by then.
No, don't do that. We've got to keep up our metrics, you know, everything up and to the right. More listeners, more people, more of the time.
Well, everyone's got more time on their hands right now, so maybe we'll get a few more listeners.
Ignore Alan. You've got nothing better to do. You've got to stay inside. Tell your friends and lovers. Get them subscribed to the Ubuntu podcast. And all your friends with ThinkPads, get them phoning in their advice. Alan can do ThinkPad Clinic or ThinkPad Corner, whatever we decide to call it. Right. Thank you all very much for listening. We'll be back next week when we'll be discussing community news, goings-on and events. If you want to send your feedback, please email us at show@ubuntupodcast.org, and you can join us in our Telegram channel, ubuntupodcast.org/telegram, for chats and catch-ups in between the shows. And do like, subscribe and smash the like button and all of that stuff. We're on YouTube at Ubuntu Podcast and we're Ubuntu Podcast on Twitter. And if you're looking for a fine VPS, then go and head to bitfolk.com. Thank you. See you next time.